you'd start walking mine.
Thank you, KDNK listeners, for joining me on the Meet in the Middle show, where we share dialogue on complex issues with local thought leaders with differing opinions. The hope is for listeners to gain new perspective and empower freedom of expression. I'm Dan Richardson. My email address is richardson@roth.net, and today's topic is Garfield County Democrats and Republicans searching for middle ground between its local leaders. My two guests are Greg Rippey and Debbie Brule. Greg Rippey is the current chair of the Garfield County Republicans. He was our state representative from 2000 to 2004, and for many decades, he's been the president and co-owner of Grand River Construction. Greg is also my first returning guest on the show, so welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
All right. And Debbie Brule. Debbie is the current chair of the Garfield County Democrats and is a past member of the Roaring Fork School Board of Education and a longtime community builder here in Carbondale and the Roaring Fork Valley. So welcome, Debbie.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. And both my guests are outstanding community members who are models of community service and community building. And it really is an honor to have you, and I'm grateful for your service. I'm doing a little plagiarism from my September 2023 show and providing some interesting statistics, which I thought were relevant here. I thought I'd set the stage with the survey results from 2016 Pew Research Center report. I know that's a little outdated, but it's as most recent as I could find. And the report found that Republicans and Democrats have more negative views of the opposing party than at any point in nearly a quarter century. And here are six takeaways that I took from that report. Many Democrats and Republicans associate negative characteristics with members of the other party and positive traits with their own. Number two, in choosing a party, disliking the policies of opponents is almost as powerful a reason as liking the policy of one's own party. So that ability to, or that repelling is as important as attracting. Number three, political conversations highlight differences, but most think it's still possible to agree on non-political topics. I would think so, and hopefully on political topics too, as we progress in our thinking. Number four, actually I'm only doing five instead of six, cold views of either party's members and frigid views of its presidential candidate. So what I took that to mean is Democrats may not like Republicans and vice versa, but they really don't like the presidential candidate of the opposing party. And then lastly, Republicans with few Democratic friends are far more likely to have very cold feelings toward Democrats and vice versa, and having cross-party friendships is associated with how coldly partisans see the other party. The reason I wanted to start the show with this is I think it is important to notice. I think I was pretty naive 10 to 15 years ago and thought that maybe the press was blowing things out of proportion, that there was more common ground than we really thought. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think there really has been some parting of the ways, if you will, in thinking. And I think in some ways that's really healthy. But part of the reason I do this show is to show that, well, okay, it's okay if we disagree, but we can still have respectful dialogue about that disagreement. So not only do I want to talk about the issues, but I like for us to model that respectful dialogue. So what is fascinating is the fact that the data from both parties is nearly identical. It's not like one party is more or less partisan. Updated research from 2022 indicates that things have only gotten worse. So a quick takeaway for me is if you are sick of partisanship, switch to being an independent and hang with people who think differently than you. That's probably not what you want to do if you're a diehard Republican or Democrat, but it's my way of trying to pull people into the middle. So anyway, let's start with Q&A and a question for each of you, and I'll throw this to Greg first. Greg, is there a common misperception you see about the Republican Party that you'd want to correct or just, you know, anything that you would want to express about the Republican Party that you feel maybe the average voter doesn't understand?
it doesn't, it strikes me as there's a world of difference between what happens in Washington and what happens in Garfield County. Mm-hmm. You know, those were very dismaying statistics that you just put out. Not all, but I believe a majority of both parties are respectful to the other one. We have issues. We try and look at them. We may not agree on the solution, but we do agree that there's a problem and there needs to be a solution. So let's identify the problems. Let's work together. I have to say, as a national party, I'm not that happy. So since we're throwing out statistics, the last one that I saw on how many Americans wanted to see a Trump-Biden replay, 67% say no. So we have to look at how are we selecting our candidates a little bit. I think the man on the street, the woman on the street, they feel disenfranchised by our selection process, that you start in Iowa, you go to New Hampshire, you go to South Carolina. And by the time South Carolina, and certainly by Super Tuesday, you've got your candidates. It's over. Mm-hmm. And it's played out in the media. It's played out in very small states. So I think that if I were to look at what I see as Republicans in the nation, I don't want to be one of those. I'm a Republican because I believe in some core principles that are limited government, individual rights, and individual responsibility. All the social issues don't go very deep with me when I'm talking about government. I have strong feelings about them personally, but I believe there's a role for government in some places, and in other places they need to stay away. So misperception of Republicans, I think, is guided by what we're seeing by the media, what we see even on YouTubes. And I watch a lot of political YouTubes, both sides of it.
Okay.
And it's interesting. But when we talk about, is there this galvanizing divide between the two? When I look at my friends in Garfield County, I don't think there is. There's issues that divide us, but I think on the whole, we love where we live. We're happy with who our neighbors are. And I have never said to anyone that I won't be your friend because of your political affiliation. Okay. Just doesn't matter. And you know, in the last 4 years, we've seen families split. That's absolutely the worst.
Yeah.
If your family is splitting because you view things differently, and I hope we can evolve and get better.
All right. Thanks, Craig. Debbie, how about you? Any misperceptions?
Well, I'll start by saying I agree with, I think there's a lot of respect among people of Democrats and Republicans in Garfield County, among most of the residents. Oh, sorry, is that better?
That's good. Thanks.
I think people are respectful and, in general, communicate well with each other, and I appreciate that. I think there's also a lot of common ground, as I think you mentioned. We all love this place we live. We love the small town caring for each other spirit. We love our mountains and rivers, and we want to protect them. So I think there is a lot of common ground. I disagree when you said, seems like you're drawing a big divide between Washington, D.C. and Garfield County. With our, not among the people, I think there's a lot of common ground. Our elected leaders, our county commissioners right now, they're talking like Washington, D.C. politicians. And they're bringing those issues down to our county. You know, there's a culture war. They're bringing into a culture war about our libraries right now, about some books that people don't like. And so there's this whole, we're going to restrict books according to certain people. It's a culture war that is, we see a lot in Washington, you know, at the national level. And now we're seeing it at the local level. And I will also say, I don't see our commissioners being mutually respectful to all people at their county commissioner meetings. I see a real problem with people, when people speak up who disagree with the county commissioners, they do not speak with them respectfully. People are put on the spot, they're criticized, they're attacked, and then when people agree with them, they're happy that they came. They say, God bless you. Like, there's a real difference when we're talking about the Republican county commissioners. On a person-to-person neighbor level, I think, I agree with you. I think we're good. When it comes to our elected leaders, I don't feel that same mutual respect and openness to different ideas.
Okay. Greg, did you have a response to that?
I do.
Okay.
First of all, you know, I get what you're saying, but this isn't a forum to talk about county commissioners. That's what we're not talking about. I hope we're talking about, and I can't speak on their behalf, but what I can tell you is we have 2 out of 3 up for election.
Yep.
And, you know, if the majority don't agree with any single candidate's positions on the issues or how they perceive them to interact, we have November.
Yep. I agree with you there.
Yeah. And that's a wonderful part about being part of a representative democracy. And I agree. I understand, Debbie, that clearly there, especially as the most local representative of a party, the commissioners are easy to say, this is how the party is performing. But clearly, as Greg said, they don't represent the party just as much as
right.
a Democrat would.
Well, and I also, you know, you said the country is divided. The country doesn't want to see a Biden-Trump rematch. There's not I don't see an equal comparison of Biden and Trump there.
Of course you don't.
And you think
but
there is.
But that's okay. Mm-hmm. We just had a presidential primary. I did not vote for Trump. I voted mm-hmm. for Nikki Haley. But that's what I want to inculcate in Republicans in Garfield County and everywhere, that it's okay to be for someone else. That doesn't make me a bad person because I was right. a Nikki Haley fan. It doesn't make someone a bad person because they like what Donald Trump has to say. So it's even within our parties, or I can speak for my party, we are dividing ourselves, and that is not good.
And I would not say that about Democrats right now. I feel like, progressive and moderate Democrats came behind Biden in 2020, and I feel like they're backing up Biden now. I don't see huge divisions in the Democratic Party. Diversity, absolutely. But I think there's a lot of support for the legislation that Biden and Democrats have accomplished in the last few years.
But here's what we're doing wrong. In Colorado, you are 28% of the vote, registered Democrat. Republicans are 27, and it's 47 to 48 for unaffiliated.
Yep.
What we're doing as parties is we're behaving in a manner that we say, you know, you don't want to identify with us because, and it's the same for Democrats as it is for Republicans. So, you know, unaffiliateds, they're saying, I've had enough of it. 67% don't want to see Biden and Trump.
Yeah, that doesn't feel fair. I mean, you put Biden and Trump in the same one. I will speak just
I'm talking about the race. Yeah.
Right. And I think we need to separate. Maybe they don't want to see Biden Trump because they feel like Trump is extremely dangerous. But I can speak locally for our county Democratic Party. We do a lot. We have a lot of supporters who are unaffiliated or independent, however you want to speak of yourself. A lot of our supporters are unaffiliated. A lot of almost everything we do incorporates unaffiliated and Democrats. Anyone who appreciates our values. And our mission is actually, our main mission is to elect open-minded, forward-thinking leaders. If they're not Democrats, we'll still consider supporting you. We invited Scott Bolitho as a Republican who will be running against Tony May in the recall election, which is, I guess, is not official yet, but it's looking like that's what will happen. And we invited him to speak to folks at one of our events. Like, we're not, the divisiveness that you talk about, I don't see it among people here. You agree with that? I don't see it in our party. The hyper partisanship, that's not my experience in our local Democratic Party at all.
If I might chime in here, because I want to take us in a slightly different direction. I think one of the things Greg mentioned, I do think that the statistics do sort of speak for themselves, that however many years ago we were red, and then we were a third, and now us independents are sort of taking over the world. So I think that is something to be aware of. And the fact that the percentage of Republicans and Democrats is pretty equal does say something. But to me, one of the things that I notice, why I was excited for the notion of open primaries and how I would be able to vote, was I thought it would draw the two parties into the center a little bit. And I don't see that happening. I see extremisms sort of taking over. And I would love it if each of you kind of spoke for your own party. And I'll start with you first, Debbie, this time. But has extremism overpowered liberalism? Again, the more you can speak locally, the better. But yeah, your thoughts on that.
If I'm speaking locally, I certainly don't. I could speak locally or nationally. I don't see extremism taking over our party. I really don't. There's no legislation that I could point to that any Democratic official, local or national, I mean, maybe local in other counties, that I see as extreme. I think that's a false dichotomy. I see extremism in the Republican Party right now. We have the leader of the Republican Party is basically opposed to many of the principles of our democracy. So I don't see any extremism in our party right now. And I do want to also address, you said you were hoping what would happen would be to draw people into the center. And I guess I'm all about finding common ground. That's really important to me. I believe we can do that. And it gives me optimism because there is so much common ground when you talk to people. Being in the middle, there's nothing inherently good about the middle. And I think about that. Sometimes it's easier to see if we talk about something that's not currently we're in the midst of. I think about the Civil War. Was our country divided? Absolutely. Was the problem that our country was divided? No, the problem was that half of our country wanted to enslave other human beings. And so should we have met in the middle? Should we have said, okay, Southern states, you can keep 50% of your slaves? No. Human enslavement is wrong, and there's things we need to stand for and stand for strongly and not bend and not move to the middle. And I think we're seeing a lot of those issues today. We need to stand for, voters have the right to vote. Everyone has the right to vote. And you cannot deny the results of election because you did not like the results of the election. That is not okay. White nationalism, white Christian nationalism, white supremacy, that is not okay. Those are the things that we're seeing on the Republican side, and there is no way I think we should meet in the middle and be halfway Christian nationalist or halfway white supremacist. There are things that we stand for, and we need to stand for them strong and not compromise and not move to the middle.
Okay. Just to clarify before I give the idea of in the show title is that we congregate in the middle, but it doesn't mean that's where the agreement has to be. I think we just have to occupy that space to hear the other person.
And I'm not criticizing your show. Mm-hmm. There is this idea that the middle is always better and the two parties are too extreme. And it's like, well, no, you got to look at what each party is doing and what they stand for.
Okay. Greg, same question to you. Has extremism overpowered conservatism?
No question.
Okay.
But to Debbie's point about she hasn't seen any extremism, and I don't know if she conveniently left out the state legislature. Right now, we are seeing some very extreme bills being introduced to stop drilling forever in the state of Colorado. The economic impact of that is extreme, and I don't think there's any other way to put it. In Garfield County, if you were to say there's never going to be another well drilled, and it just goes away to some other state, because I'm in favor of changing and changing our energy mix, but you can't do it at the flip of a switch. And the bill that was in there says 2030, no more wells. That's not a very reasonable transition. So I think particularly on the state level, we're seeing some extremism in the bills that are introduced. Now, that doesn't mean that they'll be passed. And that's where I'm hoping that there is the meat in the middle. Yesterday in Colorado Politics, Marianne Goodland had an outstanding article. And it was called The Two Legislatures. And there are things that you talk about that you have a very that are very partisan. But her statistics in that is out of 600 bills that will be introduced in the legislature this year, 80% of them are bipartisan. And we're losing track of that we're doing a lot of good things in our legislature, and we'll fight very hard on the other 20%. So she compares in this article the 2023 legislature to what's happening in the 2024. And if I would encourage anybody to look at Colorado Politics and read this, because it really hit home with me when they say the 2023 was so vitriolic that there were primarily Democrats resigning, not completing their terms, because it wasn't a fun place to go and try and do public service. Mm-hmm. Currently, in 100 legislators in the Colorado Senate and House, 30 are appointed and have never stood for election. We have to get better at that. And the point of the article is that this session, 2024, there is more working together. And she says it's because people are building personal relationships. And when I was in the legislature, that was a huge part of it, was the relationship that you had with somebody across the aisle. And it was really hard to get up and say bad things about them or, you know, get away from the issue when you knew them as a good person. I think we're starting to see this, according to the article that I just referenced, happen in the Colorado legislature right now. And I applaud that. And that's what I call compromising. Now, you know, the bill that passed out of committee yesterday, the assault ban.
Right.
There's going to be Republicans that take a very hard stand on that. I think it'll pass. I think it'll be signed.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's been some tweaks made to it. The Democrats recognizing that, you know, if we really want to move this forward, there's some things that you got to give on. At the end of the day, I hope all our schools. I don't own an assault rifle. But there's a lot of people that get wrapped up in the Second Amendment and what it really means and what it doesn't mean. But I think that one is a perfect example of how we're going to get to a better outcome by working together rather than just absolutely saying, here's the bill we wrote. It's going to be this way. Take it or leave it. So there's different ways to meet in the middle. And amendments and doing that, I think, is an appropriate way to do it.
I agree. I think it's really important for people to talk to each other, to get to know each other as human beings. Absolutely. And we always have to make some kind of compromises in bills. But there's also really important things we need to stand for. And some of the things I see at a national level, I see Republicans voting against. I don't see that kind of compromise that is helpful.
Debbie, let me ask. Greg mentioned an example of the Democrats being extreme with the drilling. Do you see anything, again, ideally more locally, where you see Republicans taking an extreme stance?
So locally, it seemed extreme to me to say to support the Uinta rail train. We had lawmakers on local and statewide Republican and Democratic lawmakers saying this train carrying oil every day through Garfield County, right along our river, which was, studies showed it was likely to have an accident and an oil spill somewhere along the Colorado-Utah route once every 4 years. And that is something we had, Republicans and Democrats were coming forward and saying, no, this doesn't make sense. There's no value for Garfield County residents. And they took the stance of supporting that train. That seemed extreme to me.
Okay.
So let me tell you a place where we've probably worked together, and that's on the proposed quarry. Mm-hmm. Up there, mm-hmm. Republicans, Democrats,
yep.
We're saying, no, this isn't appropriate in this place. I happen to agree with you on the Uinta rail.
And interesting, I had a Republican on the show in the fall, and he too was opposed to that.
I really agree. There's a lot of common ground among people in Garfield County. There was widespread opposition to that.
Yeah. Okay. I thought we'd have we've got a few more minutes till the bottom of the hour, but any other issues locally that you guys feel either is, I'll open it up to either one of you. I'll go back to you, Greg, first, that you think is important, that either it's representing common ground or is pulling the parties apart? Anyone you want to talk about in particular or issue?
Well, I think the big one is immigration and how are we going to do it? And I was certain that Debbie would bring up Sanctuary County and want to talk about that. And it is an issue. But the issue is, there's a human issue to it, for certain. Our failure, and I say our, and I mean Democrats, Republicans. I worked with Senator Bennett 6 years ago to try and get meaningful immigration reform, because that's what we need. We need immigrants. You know, when people move in illegal to Garfield County, I can't hire them. Every person that I hire has to go through an E-Verify system in D.C. So if it's not a great place to be able to say, okay, come here, but you can't work, you can't do anything. And so the big issue is we have to hold our elected officials in D.C. and say it is way past time for meaningful immigration reform. And we should both parties demand it, because I don't have enough workers. Mm-hmm. I would love to have more workers, but it doesn't help me at all, and not to be selfish about it, but it doesn't help the community if they can't work.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Your thoughts on that? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done around immigration, and we do need workers, like you said. I appreciate that. And it's not a simple issue. It's complex. It's something we need to come together about and have a conversation about. There was just a bipartisan reform that had almost everything that Republicans demanded, and Donald Trump ensured that the Republicans vote against it, because he wanted to be able to continue hammering Democrats on their immigration policy rather than actually tightening up the border. That just happened.
Well, so actually, it was mostly a funding bill, and it didn't talk about policy. It's talking about funding and having more agents down there and securing the border. I agree with you on that. It should have passed.
Yes. It should have passed. And it's interesting, again, that there, it's mirrored a little bit on the local level. You know, Carbondale went to the county commissioners and said, and to talk about this issue that we have. They wouldn't even join a conversation to talk about the issue and on a regional level. Like, you got to really be willing to work in good faith.
I want to dig into this a little deeper, but first, it's 4:30, the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Meet in the Middle show on KDNK Community Access Radio. I'm the host, Dan Richardson, and my guests are Debbie Brule and Greg Rippey. Today's show is Garfield County Democrats and Republicans searching for middle ground between its local leaders. So I've read that, I don't remember what article this was in, but this person said that social media encourages us to perform our perspectives instead of exploring our perspectives. And so the immigration issue, I think, sort of speaks to this. And Greg, I think it was you who mentioned the specifically the sanctuary, in this case, county issue. Is it productive for any elected body to talk about either being a sanctuary city or county or not? And I'll give you a chance. Because that was, you see what I'm saying? Like, there's immigration.
Well, but we aren't. Was it acceptable for them to say we're a non-sanctuary county?
I'm saying, is it productive to even talk in that language, like being a sanctuary city or not being a sanctuary county? Is that productive?
So I'd have to go back to the bigger issue again. And I think if you were to ask Mayor Johnston, should Denver be a sanctuary city? When I've been in a number of meetings in the last 3 months where they are requiring every department to cut their budgets by 10% to be able to pay for what's occurring as a sanctuary city. Now, put aside whether, you know, these are humans and we should help them. And put it in the perspective of we're not really helping them. We're not helping them when we buy a big hotel and just warehouse them. So I can't get, yeah, we should. Sanctuary city shouldn't even be part of the equation, in my opinion. You know, we are a nation of immigrants, and the bulk of them came through one place, Ellis Island. But we had a process on how to able to allow them into the country, know who they were. Some of them got sent back, and then how to go forward. And it wasn't without its issues and without its problems, but it was better than what we're doing now. We have no reasonable system to allow immigrants to come into the United States right now. I have an employee that is here legally, but his daughter is alone in Mexico. She wasn't allowed. Three of the family was, and she wasn't because she had applied within the previous 12 months or something. And I'm trying to help him to say, okay, got an attorney in El Paso trying to get this done, and we're punishing people that are trying to do it the right way. So sanctuary, not sanctuary, very few of the people are coming in as seeking political asylum or, you know, their life is in danger. There's some. There's no question about it, which is a whole different thing than saying they're trying to better their lives and they think America's a better place to be able to do that. And I welcome that. Those are the kinds of people we want that say, I hold the family dear and I want to do better. But our system is so broken.
I think we're agreed. Our immigration system is broken. I hope you're not going to say that's all Biden's fault. but I think we're agreed on that it is broken and that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to address it. You know,
Trump didn't do anything from 2016 to 2020 to make it better. He didn't do anything to make it better. He talked about border security and building a wall. But you know what? If we have a system, we don't necessarily need the wall. You need a turnstile and a way to ensure who and know who you're allowing in there.
Yeah. So I think we're agreed that we met in the middle. We're agreed. We need a better system, a better immigration system. But the sanctuary you know, sanctuary issue is an interesting one. Denver is not a sanctuary city. Garfield County is not a sanctuary city. Why did our commissioners have to write a big resolution that we are a non-sanctuary county and include in there all sorts of stereotypes about immigrants that were very negative? 30% of our community is Latino. You see Latino people and people assume they're immigrants. That was just a negative, divisive thing for them to do, and there was nothing productive about it. We are not a sanctuary county. The county's commissioners referred to Carbondale as a sanctuary town. We're not a sanctuary town. So that issue should not have brought up. They did not need to make that resolution. They particularly did not need to word it the way that they did.
I thought this was, I really gave this a lot of thought. And the reason I bring this question up is I agree with both of you. It's clear, I think, most Americans would agree that our immigration system is completely dysfunctional. And I appreciate you, Greg, saying that our job is to hold our elected leaders accountable in trying to fix that problem. We've all been unsuccessful at doing that so far. But I also thought, the town of Carbondale did a stand-up job with trying to support the migrants as best they could. With the resources they had. I thought it was a humane approach. But I also think what I heard from the town say is this is unsustainable and we can't continue to do this. And so trying to give the commissioners the benefit of the doubt, which I try my best to do, I was thinking, well, are they trying to send a message that, hey, we can't support people infusing into our community unless you have housing and work? I think in doing so, they disenfranchised a community. They didn't demonstrate a empathy and support for those who have been part of the community. So I agree with that. But is there something that local communities need to communicate to say we can't afford to do this every year?
But people are coming here because there were jobs.
Right.
There are day jobs in unincorporated Garfield County. Every day, there's places where people can go, and I mean that's why they were coming here. So, I don't think the non-sanctuary resolution made a dent in that.
You say that there's jobs here, but they're not jobs with the people that are paying cash or whatever they're doing.
It's not a good system.
My lowest paid employee is $25 an hour. They would love to be able to work for $25 an hour. I can't hire them. They're being further taken advantage of by people that want cheaper labor. It's not quite slavery, but it's not far from it.
Well, I'm not saying it's a good system. I'm just saying that's why people are coming. It's not that, so making an anti-sanctuary resolution did not do anything.
You know, and I really hate, and we live in the West, and everybody thinks all the immigrants are coming in over the southern border. There's lots coming in that came in as students, never went home. There's a lot of different ways other than that southern border that we're having illegal workers in this country. So I, just out of interest yesterday, I logged on and wanted to see what it would look like if I wanted to immigrate to New Zealand. Now, they've got the advantage of being an island.
Right.
But the forms that you have to go through, you've got to talk about your skills. It's got to fall within and I'm too old, I don't think they'd ever take me anyway. Under 60, you might get a waiver, but it's up to 55, and they have an entire list of where are they lacking skill sets. And if you fall into one of those, you're probably going to be allowed to come in and be a worker and live in New Zealand.
Where in our country it's completely ambiguous and could take many, many, many years and a lot of money.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of Republicans never wanted to see the path to citizenship. Once they come here and work, I think there has to be a path to citizenship. I've got a number of people that I employ that when they started, they weren't citizens. And that was one of the proudest moments of their life, is when they were able to pass that citizenship, one of them in particular kept asking me questions. And I says, why are you asking me these questions? And he says, because I'm going to take my citizenship test. I says, well, why are you asking me? And he says, because all the other guys over here that graduated from Glenwood High don't know the answers. Don't get me going on civics.
Well, I will say, as an unaffiliated and as an independent, I have seen, I've observed, and I can't prove it with statistics, like to me, the Republicans in Congress vetoing that bill is an example of extremism, and things I hear locally, assuming anybody who's not from the United States is here legally, I see that extremism. Likewise, with Democrats, I see a defensiveness almost as if, you know, we should be opening the borders and we need immigration. We do need immigration.
How are we extreme? I just didn't get that.
What I hear expressed from some Democrats is that, you know, having restrictions on immigration is ridiculous, that we need immigration. And so...
I must say, the idea that Democrats are for open borders is something I hear from Republicans. I don't hear that from Democrats. There's a lot of, you know, Biden's just opening up the border. I think that's a myth.
Well, I'm just saying what I hear in speaking to people, that from Democrats in particular, is a feeling that, you know, we should be letting in everybody and immigration is important. So my point is that I see this extremism, but I'm hearing from the two of you that, wow, it really is about a system. If we can come to agreement on the terms of who comes in and when, we might be able to eliminate a lot of the crisis situations that we're facing. So that's encouraging to me, but I just want you to know, from my perspective, I do hear extreme views on this issue from kind of both sides of the aisle, if you will.
So just to be clear, it wasn't a veto.
Well, sorry.
They voted against it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Sorry. And.
Thank you.
I don't get that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're railing about an issue and there's a way to get money into it to support that, we know why it happened.
Right.
I can't defend it.
And I mean, and that is a different kind of extremism when Trump can get people to vote against something that was actually had much of what they were asking for. Was going to tighten up the borders that Republicans are saying over and over and over. And you have one leader, Trump, who can convince all these Republicans not to vote for it. That's a kind of extremism you are not seeing in the Democratic Party.
Well, and there certainly wasn't the, well, no, we don't like this. How about this? And that to me is frustrating. There didn't seem to be a desire to meet in the middle on that one for sure. Okay, Greg, I asked you about issues. You brought up immigration. We spent a bunch of time talking about it. Debbie, any issue you want to bring up that?
You had mentioned gun control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one that I feel very strongly about. The Colorado legislature passed a red flag gun law, which is just common sense to me. Basically saying that if a family member or a law enforcement officer believes someone is a danger to themselves or to others, they can bring that to court and have a person not own a gun for 1 year. That's common sense. I think the vast majority of people in Garfield County and across our country want that kind of thing. And again, our county commissioners made a resolution that they would not put any resources toward in enforcing that.
Mm-hmm. Greg, any thoughts on that?
That's really the sheriff's call, and not the commissioners, on enforcement.
They made a resolution, though. They put forth a resolution.
Resolution has no standing of law. You can tell them what you think about it. And I think they had a resolution out when the bill first was introduced. I'm in favor of red flag laws. So, you know, Dan, where you ask about, and I'm glad that Debbie's happy that she thinks her party is all lockstep. The Republicans aren't. And our issues that we have right now, they come down to guns. They come down to reproductive rights. And I have to say that those that are on that side are on the wrong side of what the majority of Americans feel. And, you know, we've got these people that have the rhino wall of shame. And if you don't fall in lockstep with their positions on those issues, you're not a Republican. You're a Republican in name only. Mm-hmm. And I take deep offense to that because I believe I'm very much a Republican. I'm not their kind of Republican.
Yes.
I'm a thinking one. And I think there's more thinking ones than there are those others. And they say, well, you know, the open primaries is killing us in being able to put up good candidates. No, what's killing you is you're putting up whack job candidates.
Well, and that's what I've heard about you, Greg, that you're a thoughtful Republican, a reasonable Republican. But the issue is the Republican Party has gotten hijacked by the extremists, by Trump. Like, there's not an equivalency between extremism on one party and extremism on the other.
I don't disagree, and we certainly have a problem with our state party, in my opinion. I was interviewed by Colorado Politics telling what I thought of our state party chairman. But I can tell you, in Garfield County, we're very inclusive. We're very happy. And we talk in the same tone as I'm talking about right now, that everybody matters, everybody's point of view matters. And, you know, that's about all I can deal with. Unless I was running for some higher office, and I'm not going to do that again. We've got to start where we can and make it scalable.
I guess I'm a little confused. Start where we can. We need to be communicating with each other, absolutely, having good conversations. At the same time, you're the chair of the county party, so you've got to be supporting candidates, right? I mean,
I don't, as chair, I am, when we're talking about a primary, I'm totally neutral.
Yes, we are too. But I meant, you're directing your county party. I assume your county party will support specific candidates. And so many Republican candidates right now are falling lock, stop, and barrel behind Trump because they feel like they need to do that to win their nomination.
They're afraid of him.
They are afraid of him. That is not the way democracy is supposed to work.
I'm going to chime in here for a second. And I think I would love it if all of us improved our skills at holding each other accountable. And I think there are opportunities, regardless of what party you're in, but especially if you're a Republican, you have more standing with another Republican. So when they say something that doesn't make sense, they oversimplify immigration or something to that effect, I think that's where we have our greatest leverage to say, wait a minute, I see that differently. And I think with going back to your issue, Debbie, with gun rights, or the gun issue, I did a great show. I had Lou Valario, our sheriff, on, and Tim McFlynn, who is a lifetime civil rights attorney. And they weren't necessarily excited, or at least one of them wasn't excited to be on the show with the other. But afterwards, they both felt it was really illuminating and good. And so I want to ask each of you a question. Do you think it would be productive within your own party to bifurcate the issue of gun rights and gun violence? And do you think that would help us create better solutions to the problems we're facing?
Can I go first?
Sure.
I think there's this idea being put out by Republicans that Democrats are against the against the Second Amendment and trying to take away people's rights, take away people's guns. I've never heard that. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to respond as if, okay, I'm willing to support the Second Amendment. No one's opposed to the Second Amendment. We just want common sense gun laws. So can we find common ground? Sure seems like Greg and I can.
But let me push back there. If I'm a diehard gun rights supporter, I might take offense by saying we just need common sense, because there has been calls, you know, even the bill that you mentioned is compromising, or I don't know what the right word is, but restricting gun rights to some degree. And so someone might say, well, that's not common sense. And so I think...
But at this point, the laws that we're talking about are common sense. I mean, at least the ones like the red flag gun law that I'm talking about, those are not like nobody can have a gun. It's like you can't have a gun if you're not mentally stable, or you can't have an assault rifle. Like hunting rifles, I don't see anyone trying to take those away. Assault weapons? Yeah. So I guess I'm not sure what your question is. I understand people have gun rights. People want to be able to protect themselves. People want to be able to hunt. But we're talking about getting rid of assault weapons.
But actually, I love the way you framed it, the difference between gun violence and gun rights. And I think that can lead to a discussion of saying, nobody's going to say that Columbine was a good thing. Nobody's going to talk about any mass shooting. The theater shooting, none of that is good. And I think we can start there.
Yes.
And so that was to Dan's point of talking about gun violence. So we have to go back and take a look at what's happening on gun violence. Is it restricting the rights, or is it another approach to it? And, you know, the gentleman and the wife in... Was it Wisconsin that was just found guilty last week for supplying a gun to their son and then not keeping it locked up and holding them accountable? I mean, it's just a tragic story all the way around.
Totally. And back to your point, Dan, I think there is a lot of common ground around gun. You know, gun safety. I think there's a lot of common ground, but then it goes to Congress, and Republicans will veto it, not because they're concerned about gun rights, but because the NRA has so much money.
So they'll veto it. Are you saying Trump's going to be our next president?
I'm sorry, veto it. They'll vote against it.
I started that. My fault.
Yeah. People are not voting. The legislators, Congress, senators are not voting against gun legislation because they're really concerned about gun rights. They're voting against gun legislation because there's so much lobbying money, like with the NRA and similar groups. So I don't think the issue is that Americans can't come to a greater common understanding. I think Americans share a lot of common understanding around what we need. It just doesn't happen in Washington.
Well, I would say, Greg, I like the fact that you like that I broke this up. And my experience is the perspective on common sense varies a lot. And where I think that middle ground can be sought is how we approach these individual conversations to build momentum. And doing a couple shows on this issue, it would be my request to break those two issues up, and I think we'd find the common ground a little quicker.
Can I share something that I found?
It.
I was looking at some interesting statistics.
And we are getting near the end, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, just I found a poll
from
I don't know where it is right now, from Fox News about how people feel about guns. And there was like 80% of the people think we shouldn't have assault weapons. Huge percentage, 60% of the people think we need, you know, greater background checks. There is huge consensus among Americans. If that's on Fox News, you better believe that, like, they wouldn't put it out there unless, you know, that's not leaning in the left direction for sure. So there is a lot of consensus around this. It just doesn't happen when we get to Washington.
My guess is this is just a wild guess, but I bet there'd be more than 90% who would say we need less gun violence. And maybe approaching it that way might help us, you know, find that middle ground. So
I don't want to meet the other 10.
Right.
Agreed.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't say 100% because I don't think that's the case. So we just have a couple minutes left. Any closing thoughts on where Democrats and Republicans can find any kind of middle ground, or should there be, you know, in our area? And I'm looking at you, Debbie, okay. But no.
You know, like I said, I think there's a lot of common ground in Garfield County. I really do. And from Parachute to Carbondale, you know, we're very different. There's a lot of diversity as well. But there's so much common ground. We all love this place where we live. We want to protect the water, protect the air. People believe in climate change. Like, that's not a super divisive issue anymore. Aside from a small amount of people, people generally believe we need to address climate change. So I think there's so much common ground. But when we get to our leaders, you know, our county commissioners are spending funds, our tax funds, on a climate denying group. Like, that's just not okay. So I'm optimistic about how much common ground there is, and we just need people to act on that and get to the polls and elect great leaders who will address that common ground.
Thanks, Debbie. Greg, any final thoughts?
Go find a Republican and give him a hug.
Okay. All right. Well, I did hear on multiple occasions each of you say, I agree, or good point. So quick yes or no answer. Greg, did you learn anything new today or gain a new perspective?
No, I don't think so. Huh? But you know, I'm thrilled to hear Debbie say, I was a little disappointed when she goes, you know, there's certain issues that you're intractable from.
This was a quick yes or no answer, Greg.
A little bit.
Okay. Debbie, how about you?
Yes, I'm very glad to finally meet Greg.
All right. I am so grateful the two of you were willing to put some thought into this. It is very difficult to find guests because most people don't have the courage that you guys have. So thank you, Debbie Brule and Greg Rippey, for joining me today. It was an honor. Today's show was Garfield County Democrats and Republicans Searching for Middle Ground Between Its Local Leaders. I'm Dan Richardson. My email address is richardson@roth.net. Thank you for listening to KDNK and the Meet in the Middle show. We'll be back in a month. Take care. Just a few end notes. This show was pre-recorded on March 20th. And also, please be ready for KDNK's Spring Membership Drive, which kicks off on April 3rd at the Village Smithy. If you're not already a member, we sure hope you join. There's lots of great stuff becoming a member. Thanks for supporting KDNK, and we'll see you next month. It was 700 fence posts from your place to ours. Neither one of us was old enough to drive a car. Sometimes it was raining.